Welcome back to Live from Studio 5 on AMI Audio. Fleetwood Mac, AMI TV recently featured a special called Postcards from the Yukon. And it was co-hosted by AMI's Ottawa host Dave Brown and Live from Studio 5 contributor Lawrence Gunther. They traveled between Whitehorse and Dawson, met a number of interesting locals and First Nations people, and took part in some pretty interesting activities. Joining us this morning to offer further insights on the adventure and some behind-the-scenes stories is our regular environmental contributor and host of Bluefish Radio Herd right here on AMI Audio every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, Lawrence Gunther. Lawrence, welcome back to the show.
Hey, let's call it what it is. Shameless plug for my episode.
You got it. Done and done, and we're happy to help.
So, so Lawrence, before we get into the show, are you a Fleetwood Mac fan?
You know what? I had a thing for that one singer with that long hair, you know, when I was, because I was young, a young teenage boy, and she was always seemed so hot, even though she wore those big moo-moo dresses.
All right, well, moving on. Let's talk about your trip to the Yukon. So turned out really great, first of all. But what was your goal in sort of going to the Yukon and setting up this exploration of that part of the country? And did you feel that at the end of it, you'd set out, you know, you did what you had set out to do?
Well, we wanted to get a feel for the people and what the people do up there. Like, why go to the Yukon territories, right? I mean, if you watched, you know, you read some books and you hear about people that bounce around a bit and then they end up bouncing up into Alaska or the Yukon or somewhere as their last possible chance, you know, to make it. And we met a lot of young people who, you know, who did that, who bounced their way through life and they found this place up there for themselves. They found somewhere where they could fit in their own way. And I think that was what we wanted to find. How do people fit in? How's all this diversity? Because the Yukon is just absolutely chock-a-block full of diverse people. It's amazing. And these are people that are real individualists. We wanted to hear about them. We wanted to hear about the First Nations people that really, you know, that personify individualism and self-sufficiency. Wanted to meet them and just really get a feel for the place. And I think we did it. We met some amazing people.
Did you guys run into any challenges along the way?
Well, you know, it was a week after the summer solstice. So, like, I think the sun went down. You know, we'd come out. We'd had long days. We had 10, 12-hour days. We'd go for dinner around 8 o'clock, come out of the restaurant around 9:30, tired, exhausted. And the sun's still beating down on us full blast, right? Like, the sun didn't hit the sack until 11:30 at night. And it was up again at 4:30 in the morning. So, you know, poor Dave, right? He has albinism, and man, and if there's a guy that doesn't want to be in the sun 14, 16 hours a day, it's him. So we always had to make sure we found some shade. And in the land where there's not a lot of trees, I mean, we were in areas where there wasn't a lot of trees, so finding shade wasn't always easy.
Yeah, no, that must have been tough on Dave, but it still sounds like an incredible experience. The special opens with the two of you surrounded by about 145 huskies. What was that like?
Well, you know, Dave really got into the puppies, and I'm, you know, I've had guide dogs for 31 years, and I'm, you know, super lucky. I get these amazing trained dogs. You know, they're valuable, they're trained, they know everything, they know 100 words. You know, it's been like being pulled around by a Cadillac. They're gorgeous. But then a husky, what does a husky do? It tows things for a living, right? So one thing that didn't make it into the shot, and I said to the owner, they have 145 husky dogs. And they're all like racing dogs, and they're using them for tourism and to teach people how to run dog sleds. I said, give me, you know, they have, each dog has its own box and its own sort of area, and it's on a chain. I said, and then they have a big yard area where the dogs can run free. I said, let me take a few of the dogs to the yard area and let them go so they can have their run. I said, give me five. And the owner said, what? I said, yeah, give me five of them. I'll take five down. She goes, no, one. And I said, no. I said, fine, why not five? She goes, no, just one. I said, okay, two. So we settled on two. So she brings the first dog out on a rope. I take it. I wrap the rope around my hand. The dog's like jumping up in the air. It's on its back legs. I'm almost getting pulled over. Then she comes with the second dog, and she doesn't want to give it to me. And I said, give me the other dog. And she goes, no. And I said, give it to me. So she finally gives me the other dog, and I just go skidding down the road. Like, I'm barely, not even walking. I'm just water skiing down this gravel path with these two huskies just towing me.
And you wanted to start out with five?
I wanted to five. And we finally finally get to the yard. I get them in the gate. I unhook them. They run away into the yard. I'm exhausted. I said, okay, two down, 143 to go.
Man, I've just got this image of Yukon Cornelius from that old Christmas Rudolph special with the sled and the dogs, and he's yelling mush, and they don't understand it. He's actually showing the dogs how to do it, and the dogs are on the sled, and he's pulling the sled with the dogs on it. It was pretty comical. That's the image I have in my head right now, Lawrence, you pulling all those sled dogs.
The dogs can pull like that, and they love to pull, and that's their whole love and their job in life.
Yeah.
And then you take another dog, and you teach it how to guide gently and carefully, you know, as a guide dog. It's such a, you know, they're two or two polar opposites. Amazing.
Lawrence, I know you got to meet a lot of people who make the Yukon their home. Was there sort of a common thread among those folks?
You know, there was, and I think it was this entrepreneurial attitude. You know, people who had an idea for a business, they had something in mind they wanted to do. And they could have done it somewhere, you know, around a big city in the South, you know, with all the amenities and entertainment opportunities and, you know, and warmth in the winter, maybe sunlight in the winter. But instead, they ended up in the Yukon, and they did it because maybe they're a little antisocial. Maybe they like the idea of living in the bush. And, you know, we always hear about running water and how important it is to have running water and what a horrible thing it would be not to have running water. Most of these entrepreneurs that are running businesses that we encountered they don't live near their businesses. They live in the bush in a cabin with no running water and an outhouse. And they don't even put a door on their outhouse. They just turn the outhouse so it faces north. So when they're sitting in there in the wintertime, they can look at the northern lights and they can see the bears coming. But they love it. They love it. You know, propane heat, propane lights, a wood stove for heat, you know, cutting wood. They go through, you know, cords of wood to heat the cabin. It's the same way the gold rushers did it, you know, in 1897 when they went up there and lived in tents and huts with tin stoves. These people are real entrepreneurs. They're real individuals. And, they're rocking it their own way. And it's amazing, absolutely amazing. I bought a little gold nugget, you know, from this jeweler. And we were talking afterwards. And he said, I have a jewelry shop in Vancouver. He said, but I love it up here. He said, I own two buildings in Dawson, this jewelry shop. I own apartments upstairs that I rent out. He said, but my wife and I live out back in a 12-by-12 cabin that has a table, two chairs, a stove, and a bed. And he said, that's all we need.
That sounds glorious.
That sounds amazing.
It really does.
Yeah.
I remember, Lawrence, watching a documentary about a gentleman who had moved to Alaska. This was I believe it would have been about the 1960s or 70s. And it was called Alone in the Wilderness. And he just went up there, built his own cabin. Everything was done. He did himself. He had one friend who canoed up there and helped him out for a little bit, but otherwise everything was done by himself. He made his own tools. He made his own dishes. And he just lived comfortably in this small cabin that he built. And honestly, the simplicity of it. You know, we were talking earlier this morning about Juwita not having her phone with her today, and that one moment where she kind of felt, I don't have my phone. But I said, you know what? By the end of the day, that will have passed very quickly, and that feeling of being sort of removed from the hustle and bustle just by not having your phone. I mean, can you imagine being up in a remote area like that, living in a small, comfy cabin like that? And it's just, to me, like, right near the top of my bucket list.
Well, you know, they say the people that go and run a fur trap line, right? You go out, you have to stake your trap line, you have to register your trap line. You go way in the bush to get a piece of land, just a stretch of creek. And then you build a little cabin, and you go in there and you stay in there all winter for 8 months, and you just check your trap line every day, every 2 days, and you're by yourself with your books and your firewood and your food supply. And they say, if you don't really love yourself, you're going to go crazy.
Yeah.
No, it's a great way to live your life. It's uncomplicated. There's a simplicity there. But you also have to be pretty rugged. And I know that I'd probably enjoy the solitude. I'd probably enjoy the campfires. Would love to see the northern lights. I'm not so happy about the lack of indoor plumbing and running water. That is my one grievance with this, but I think I'm the kind of person who would love to visit the Yukon, but maybe not live there. So if I were planning a holiday, what are some of the things I want to take into account?
Well, Dawson for sure is an amazing, Dawson was nothing, right? I mean, that's where the Yukon River and the Bonanza Creek come together. And that's where they found that gold in 1897 in a little creek. The natives knew about it. The kids used to collect it, but it wasn't good for anything. You couldn't form an axe or a spearhead out of gold. It was too soft. So the kids just played with it the First Nations children played with it as toys. It had no material value to it. They didn't want to haul it around. It was too heavy. So it was just toys. And then they showed some white people the gold, and the white people registered the claim. And then, boom, it took off. Like 100,000 people showed up there. In a year and a half, 100,000 people showed up there and registered claims. Dawson just took off. And you still see the old buildings that they built, you know, and from that era. It was just bang them up, wood boards, boom, boom, boom. And just to be walking around on those board sidewalks, you know, you're always stepping off the edge of the sidewalk. So wear good ankle support shoes for sure. And because there's, you know, none of it's smooth transitions. People who use wheelchairs, I don't know how they're going to do it. But you're right by the river. You're by these old saloons. And all these old saloons and things have been turned into restaurants. And they keep the show alive a little bit. Yeah, I went into Diamond Tooth Gertie's and one evening and checked out the show. And it was a beautiful musical with Charlie the Miner singing his parts and Diamond Tooth Gertie singing her parts and five super, you know, athletic dancing girls in their can-can outfits doing the can-can and, you know, really like high-end qualified dancers. It was a really, really well-done musical show. But so there you can really step back into the past there. And then you just leave Dawson and you go on the river and it's just amazing the scenery and the feel and the smell of everything. There's so much to harvest. There's so many amazing smells and things to touch and taste and try. And so many people just absolutely ready to take you out of the city, out of the communities and bring you into that, you know, place like that, the place we went with the dogs. They offer, you can go up there for a week and stay in their log cabin, and every day they'll take you on a dog sled ride, and they'll teach you how to run a dog sled team, and they'll bring you out on the lake and cut a hole in the ice, and you'll go ice fishing, and you'll build a campfire, and you'll just do that every day until it becomes, you know, second nature to you. So there's a ton of things to do. I got to catch an Arctic grayling, which is a beautiful fish. It doesn't get very big, about 2 pounds, but it's got feathers for fins. It sparkles. It's got colors, amazing colors. You know, it's just beautiful to touch. There's not a pokey thing on it. No teeth. Gorgeous little fish. We let that go. Dave Brown caught his first lake trout, the iconic lake trout. That was his very first fish ever. And I'm happy to say I taught him how to fish. So, you know, there's so many things to do up there. Just tons of stuff.
I know Dave enjoyed it very much, Lawrence. Thanks very much for sharing some more of the memories of that trip with us here this morning. We appreciate it.
No, my pleasure, you guys. And check it out on AMI TV. You can get a link right there on the AMI TV website. There's a play link right there so you can watch it on your own computer at home.
Fantastic. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, Lawrence.
Right on.
Lawrence Gunther. He is our environmental expert and host of Bluefish Radio. Make sure you catch the show Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on AMI Audio. And as you mentioned, AMI.ca for the AMI TV section. And you can watch the video right there online.